And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Bird to your mother, it's time for another episode of Birds with Friends. Just a trio of feathery brethren weathering any season to see the Eagles eat teams like Scrammy's top with cheese. It's Philadelphia, Bo, Sheil, and Zach kicking it cooler than three penguins till Zach runs off with his valet keys. He's a real nuanced goose. Pull up a branch, get loose. It's time for some juice on some
Birds with Friends.
The early bird gets the worm, but prefers getting turned like a turn on some
Birds with Friends.
Bo, Sheil, and Zach coming at you with steps and things, flapping their wings on
Birds with
How
friends.
Do you have time to consume all this content? You're listening to Dave Spadaro interviews?
I take a morning bike ride, and I listen
to I want to hear more about that, but go ahead.
No, the Schuylkill Trail.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a post-game edition of Birds with Friends. Bo Wolf, Zach Berman, Marissa Morris, for some ungodly reason, joining us as well. It is 3:13 in the morning Eastern time, 2:13 in the morning here in, I wouldn't call it beautiful, Fort Worth, but, you know, that's not to denigrate Fort Worth. It's just, you know. Middle of a pandemic, it's not the place I want to be necessarily. But Zach, I think the question that everybody knows is coming your way as we start this podcast following the Eagles dismantling at the hands of the Dallas Cowboys on national television on Monday Night Football. When you take a deuce, you looking at it, or you flushing it away?
Once again, I think we need to explain the context to our listeners here so they don't think it's anything to do with my bathroom habits here. Jalen Hurts said tonight that the game is like a deuce where you flush it away, right? You don't look at it. You
he
just
said
flush
you take
it
you
away.
A deuce. You don't sit there and look at it. You flush it and move on. We're going to flush it and move on.
Yeah, that's what he said. It's incredibly nice to be on the pod, Bo. Looking forward to this.
Should take our job. So evocative and appropriate because the Eagles delivered a steaming pile of deuce in this game. Zach completely outplayed in every manner and fashion. Mm-hmm. The offense was bad. The defense was bad. They were not just bad. They were sloppy. They had 13 penalties, 15 if you count two that were declined. Jalen Hurts didn't look like he knew what he was doing. The offense didn't look like it had a plan. The defense looked like they were ready to just get taken apart any way that the Cowboys wanted. And I think it was a serious dose of reality for the Eagles after, the feel-good gassing up after week one. Certainly I was as guilty as anybody. And to get just annihilated in this game when, you know, they had an extra day to prepare. Sirianni's talking up the rivalry. He's got the T-shirts flowing. And they just show up and lay such an egg. And, you look ahead. They've got the Chiefs and the Bucks in two of the next three games. Their next eight opponents, there are only two teams with a losing record. And one of them is the Chiefs. The other is the Lions. So, like, there's a chance that this thing could get ugly quickly. And I think the most disheartening thing from my perspective was that the offense looked like it didn't have a plan. And Nick Sirianni after the game said, the plan was to try to keep up with the Cowboys offense because they knew they were going to be so explosive. Like, what kind of plan is that? Like dictate terms on your own terms. Like,
no, it's the correct plan in theory. I don't think it is, but I don't think they follow through with it. Right. Like I don't think the way they played suggested that straight to the,
you're going to put the game on Jalen Hurts's arm against Dak Prescott. Like, what are we doing?
Well, my point is you were not going to win this game in the teens, right? This was going to be a game where you needed to win in a shootout. And now that there's different
ways. Why does that have to be true? Why, you know, Shield talks about all the time, like the right game plan against, you know, to play the Chiefs. Like, you're trying to shorten the game a little bit, right? You still got to be aggressive and know that you can't just give the ball back. You got to be aggressive with your opportunities and know that you're going to have to score. But like from the jump, going like, or putting the game on Jalen Hurts' arm, like, where is the creativity in this offense? Where is building something around Jalen Hurts as a runner? Where are like the dynamic short passes we saw in week one? And I don't want to get into like a big picture thing right away, but you know, they had not a single snap of pre-snap motion in this game, right? And I asked Sirianni about that on Friday, why there isn't a lot of motion in this offense. And he said something to the effect of, you know, when you spend a lot of time perfecting your, like, he wants motion for motion. He doesn't want motion for motion's sake. And when you spend a lot of time, you know, perfecting your motion, that is time that you could be spending doing something else to work on the offense. And to me, what they spend time doing on the offense is figuring out all these different inane personnel groupings. Like, why do we need to be spending time trying to figure out a way to get Greg Ward on the field or JJ Arcega-Whiteside on the field? Why, like, instead of, I know, and it's players, players, players over plays, 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 but I'd much rather spend time figuring out how to best utilize Quez Watkins, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, and either Zach Ertz or Jalen Reagor, whoever's on the field, versus spending time in the lab trying to figure out how can we make sure we get the most out of JJ Arcega-Whiteside as a blocker for 15 plays a game. And it's just like, if I'm Jeffrey Lurie, like judging this hire through three games, and I know this is a long way to come after week one when we were loving up everything we saw, but like, you know, Doug Peterson wasn't fired as a head coach. Doug Peterson was fired as an offensive coordinator. And I'm not so sure that through three games, I'm seeing enough of Nick Sirianni as an offensive coordinator.
I'm so lost as far as what I'm supposed to address here, right? Because
I'm rambling. It's late in the
we started this maybe by talking
answer,
about their game.
Maybe you can answer the deuce thing again.
Yeah, we started this by talking about their game plan tonight. And then you finished that by talking about them replacing Doug Peterson as not as the head coach, but as the offensive coordinator. So
Zach, here's the thing. I'm not going to sleep tonight anyway, because to see David Baker up there on the big screen, I got no chance of sleeping all week.
So, all right, here. So I think you brought up good points. Let's start with tonight. I don't think they're, game plan itself was the issue. I think the way they went about it, the execution was horrendous. You know, the first seven drives,
execution, I'm in favor of it.
the first seven drives in particular, like that was the game. And this is one of those games where if you look back at it 5 months from now or 5 years from now, the stats say, you know, Jalen wasn't that bad. No, the first seven drives here, interception, punt, 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 interception, punt. Okay. that's two interceptions, five punts, four total first downs during those drives. It was bad. And that at that point, that's when you were trying to keep pace with Dallas, and they couldn't do it. I wrote it, and I believe it, the gulf between the two teams was evident. And I understand every game takes on a life of its own, but the Cowboys are a bellwether for you, not just because they're an NFC East rival, but also because they have a quarterback who's developed into a franchise quarterback, and they have an offensive coordinator who's hailed as you know, a creative offensive mind. And if you watch this game, you would believe like the Cowboys are far superior in both of those areas. And that's a concern because
they are.
Yeah. But because we're still in the process of learning about Jalen Hurts, but this is what you're trying to see. Can Jalen Hurts become that type of quarterback for you? And then you hired Nick Sirianni in part because you're looking for offensive creativity, right? So this was a discouraging night from that perspective. And if you think where they were 2 weeks ago when they had an offensive identity, and I understand you can't play every game the way you did against the Falcons, and certainly the Falcons probably contribute quite a bit to that. But it seems like Jalen Hurts did, you know, a week of like orientation, and then it's like, all right, now we're going to throw you into the AP classes. They really didn't try to do anything easy for him. Like there was no quick passing game. If he was making
few and far between.
Yeah, he was forced to make passes that, frankly, I don't know if they're his strengths. And you saw inconsistency from him. And we can get.
Well,
to,
I also think it's not. It wasn't just the game plan. It was him, like himself, not playing very well.
Exactly.
Like, he didn't see the field very well. You know, this was sort of like much more of the Jalen Hurts we saw after the Saints game last year, where he was just sort of running around aimlessly for a while. He's only looking to his right. He's turning the ball over, and it's just a long way from the guy we saw in week one.
Now, we should say because we are trying to kind of set the scene for our listeners. He put this game on him. He said, quote, "This one's on me." Then he said, "All I can do is take complete ownership for it, how I played and how it affected the team in the end." And he basically said, if he does his job, they win the game. Now, I don't know if I would phrase it like that, but he was not a good quarterback tonight. It's not that he wasn't good enough. He was not a good quarterback tonight.
I think that's fair. There are so many things. And, you know, you look at the Cowboys team, and you know what else you saw besides just a better team? And this is like something that always stands in contrast with these two teams. You saw young players making impactful plays. Like they do such a better job drafting, especially at the top, than the Eagles have done. I mean, CeeDee Lamb makes a huge play in the beginning of the game. Trayvon Diggs has a pick six and is locking guys down. You know, it's Quez Watkins, and that's about it for the Eagles, right? Like Jalen Hurts aside, like, you know, Devontae Smith did not have a great game in this game. He was, let's see, what did he have?
Six targets, what, three catches?
Three catches for 28 yards. And now I was looking at the next gen stats, and you know, these are not like be all end all stats, but he's like Devontae Smith's average separation is like towards the very bottom of the league. And it's sort of like a reminder that one of the concerns we had in the beginning is that like what makes Devontae Smith great is like the precision to be able to like win in small areas that like makes him a fit for a quarterback who is not like Jalen Hurts. Like the match of those two guys, their skill sets is not great. Doesn't really make either one of them better.
No, that's a fair point on Hurts. And you know, the best case scenario for Hurts was like that people can improve, and he has a mindset that you think can improve. But if
would you call it a growth mindset?
I do believe he has a growth mindset, but he needs to get better, right? And he showed strides during the summer, but tonight was regression. I do think as we're talking about the offense, we can't ignore something that I know was on the minds of a lot of fans, just judging by social media. So I know that's not a fair sampling, but it also came up quite a bit in the postgame press conference. And I imagine it's going to be a big talking point, and that's the lack of running plays. Three runs to the running back, and I'll say, or to the running backs rather. Miles Sanders had two carries. That's fewer than Corey Clement had for Dallas. So I'll say this: I'm not you need to run the ball guy. I think that the running was more of a symptom of the problem than the problem. Right. Like, you know, they didn't have enough plays. They were playing from behind. They had penalties that put them in compromising situations. So like all those are factors that lead to the lack of running plays. And as Jason Kelce said, there were RPOs that could have been handoffs, right, you know, if the defense looked differently. That said, you want to run the ball more than three times when you're not passing the ball efficiently, right? Like I mean, this isn't a bold take. I think most people agree with this now. It's better to be a good passing team. But it's not better to like pass when you can't pass the ball well, right? And they weren't passing the ball well in the first half. And that's why I keep going back to those seven drives, because just so many empty possessions. And I imagine we'll get to this in a bit, but even when they did have a chance to sustain drives, Sirianni punts the ball. So I do think they should have run the ball more, but I'm not like losing my mind over the lack of running plays tonight, because I think it was more a symptom of these other things, which, as I said, the lack of plays overall, and, you know, playing behind the sticks, things of that nature.
I agree. And I'm definitely not a run the ball guy. I mean, everybody who listens to this podcast knows that. That said, and I know that they only had like nine plays or whatever in the first four possessions, but like three rushes for Sanders and Gainwell combined, like that is too low.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you talk to guys like Jason Kelce and Zach Ertz after this game, and like, they want to be able to lean on the running game. And like in this game against the Cowboys defense, like their front four that can be had, I was expecting them to lean much more on the running game. Like this offense is not going to separate itself with its passing game. They sort of need to be leaning on the running game, like incorporating what Jalen Hurts can do as a runner. And they just don't seem to take advantage of that.
Well, yes,
gift
I agree
that they have. Like,
I agree.
That is. I mean, you see it. I mean, it's, you know, Greg Roman's been designing this stuff for a long time, but you see with Lamar Jackson, you see with all these other teams, like that is a gift you have to make your running game more efficient, to have a quarterback to add to the numbers game, and the Eagles just like they don't take advantage of that at all. It's very rare. And in this matchup, like that to me seemed like what was going to be the recipe for success. Keep the ball away from Dallas. I don't know.
Yeah, one would think that, I mean, just based on what we've seen in training camp, based on what we've seen now in three games, that's not the offense Sirianni wants to run, right? And now that's the quarterback that you have, but I don't know if that's his offense. I frankly don't know if they hired this coach to coach this quarterback, right? So we'll see as that progresses. I do think they need to use Hurts's legs better, more creatively than they have, because they are a weapon. And I don't think Jalen Hurts is the type of quarterback who is going to beat the Dallas Cowboys throwing the ball, you know, 39 times when it's not quick action, right? You know, when you have,
yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. But my point is like, I don't think they beat the Cowboys if Miles Sanders has 15 carries tonight as opposed to two, right? Because I think that their problems tonight were more than like just run the ball.
I think my problem is just that like this offense has no identity. And for Sirianni to say after the game that like the game plan was to, and I don't want to like make too much of his phrasing, because I'm sure it is much more complicated than this. But when he answers the question, like, what was the game plan tonight? And he says it was to like keep up with the Cowboys because we know they have an explosive offense. Like you're entering the game, like already having ceded control. Like what is your identity? Do what you do well. Don't try to match what they do well. Where there's no identity to this offense.
Well, that's what I'm, you know, I use that at that analogy that I kind of came up with on the fly, but it really seems like
flex.
No, it's not a good analogy. That's why I put it that way. But like week one was like this orientation, when week one, something that I know you can't do that every week, but use that as a template. Instead, it's like, all right, well, he did this. Now let's move on to the next level. And it's like, no, I don't know if the next level is where they should go. Right. Like all right. these shot plays. Like, I don't know if I thought you asked a good question about the pass to Rager, the first interception. And but it was just a poorly thrown ball. Like he
underthrew. I didn't like that, because to me, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but it was like it was the exact same part of the field as the Rager pass last week when, you know, he caught the ball but stepped out of bounds. And to me, it was like, all right, let's prove that we can get it right this time. Like, let's call this play. And you're right. I mean, the throw was not good, and he probably shouldn't have thrown it at all. It looked like to me like he had Gainwell on a little angle route. But I don't know. Maybe that's overreading that and thinking he was trying to get too cute. But I mean, it was not a good throw.
Now, Marissa, I don't mean to put you on the spot at 3:30 a.m. your time.
Oof, that's good stuff.
But if by any chance you are tuning into the Manning cast tonight,
I
heard on that play they said that it was a bad pass by Hurts, that like Hurts underthrew Rager.
I mean, obviously with Peyton and Eli, but they're pretty harsh on the quarterbacks. Like the whole broadcast, when they don't do something, like I think that's like the main focus. It's never. So I don't remember that exact play, but
like overall with Hurts, what was that? Were they agreeing that it was a bad game from him?
Yeah, there was a lot of things like the penalty on Dillard when he was downfield. They're like, that's not on the offensive lineman. Like the offensive lineman is called for the penalty there. And it's funny because Michael had said it right before Eli said it. He's like, that's
an apologist in that house.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, that sucks. That gets called on the offensive lineman. Like, he's got to get the ball out quicker. And that's exactly what Eli said right after that. So
if Baker was over, he might have a different opinion. So, yeah.
Now, Marissa, I didn't get a chance to watch the Manning broadcast. Who were the guests?
Well,
you know who the guests were.
It was great. Obviously, Chris Long was on.
He was.
I mean,
I called that correctly.
Amount of tweets I got about that was pretty great, not gonna lie.
Now, do we think Bo had intel on that?
I promised you I had no intel.
Okay. I mean, I see.
I feel so good about that call.
I'm on Twitter all the time, and there was no inkling of it before we recorded on Thursday.
No, I just thought to
that's
myself.
That's what I'm saying. That's why, it's a very specific thing to bring up. So I thought maybe there was some intel going.
No, well, I think I said, originally I was thinking Dawkins, but then they had McAfee on. And so it made sense that they would have on Chris Long. And someone's already got his own thing.
That
going.
Wasn't their only big guess. I think Zach should get some points because they had Saban on. As well,
Zach is going to be rewatching that bad boy for a long time to come.
Saban, putting it in the James folder. It was very good, very interesting.
Now, Super Sportcasting, as I take a look here, there is further adjudication that we need from you, Marissa.
Oh, geez, okay, the controversy.
Yes.
The McCarthy thing.
McCarthy botches a game management decision that has the football world talking post-game and on Tuesday. What do we think?
I felt like, I mean, that's not like a Tuesday morning. I mean, maybe it is because it was all like, that was bad. And they broadcast, the Manning cast was talking all about it. Twitter was up all on it. So, but it's not like Tuesday morning. They're like, oh my gosh, you know, that wasn't the focus. I think the focus is Jalen Hurts Tuesday morning. I think I got to give it to Shiel.
I agree.
I think it was a game management decision that was all over social media. Peyton Manning was disgusted by it. I think he knows a little bit more about football than I do, just a little. So
I'm not so sure about that.
So I, you know, and I again got some tweets that like I got to give Shiel the point. Right. So.
Now I have, there's another one.
I think we give it to him.
Does he get the Josh Sweat sack? Because it was a half
Josh Sweat had a half a sack.
Okay.
I think he gets it.
What do we think?
Yes. So that was another one where I think I was folding towels And Michael was like, oh, Joshua just got a sack.
That's so exactly how Zach reacted in the press box.
That is not how Zach reacted in the press box.
Yes, it is.
That is not.
He started doing a little jig.
Please, for the sake of my professionalism, that is not how I reacted in the press box. I was observing the game.
And then when Derek Barnett jumped off sides, I think you broke your computer. Is that what you did?
By the way, the Derek Barnett criticism was about unsportsman. It was about unnecessary roughness, not about just jumping off sides.
You started pounding and just chanting to yourself, pound of flesh, pound of flesh, pound of flesh.
For our listeners, that is not accurate. Okay, I maintain professionalism at all times in the press box.
You started sharpening your knives.
I will say.
So what do we think?
The video.
Half a sack. He said has a sack. I don't know if that counts.
I think he gets it. I think he gets it.
Yeah, they called his name. I feel like he's got to get it.
And he's the one who brought him down. Avante Maddox had one of those Hugh Douglas sacks where he jumped on him at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I would have given that sack to sweat. So that gives Shield three. Zach, you had none, and I had two. I had Chris Long joins the Manning broadcast, and Alex Singleton has more tackles than Michael Parsons. So Shield takes the lead in Superstore casting. He has one and a third.
Well, when you said I have none, it's kind of like when, you know, Les Snead puts up Jalen Ramsey on his draft board, right? No,
it's not because Jalen Ramsey is not playing for you in this game.
I have 17 turkeys.
It's the complete that I'm carrying opposite. Over. It's the complete opposite. It's like you have a bad record, but you're putting up your future draft picks on the board.
I have 17 turkeys that I'm carrying over. Okay, what I am doing,
you will
is,
do nothing with.
It's
the complete opposite of Les Snead.
No, what I'm saying is that you are being literal. You're being too literal. I have the longest view in the room here.
Okay. You're gonna use your number one overall picks on two guys who can't shoot. All right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I don't even know what we need to talk about after this.
So can I bring something up here?
I
certainly don't want to seem aggrieved by it, but I asked.
David Baker?
It occurred. I asked about it. I was nonplussed. Is that the word you would use about the explanation? So Sirianni has a 4th and 5. Okay, Let me pull this up here.
Pound of flesh.
Fourth and 5 at the Dallas 46 with what, 5 minutes, 9 seconds to go in the second quarter. At that point in the game, it is 20-7. Okay.
I think you were right about this.
Now he sends on Sitbos the punt.
It's the best play on the team.
I don't like the call. Now I didn't have the numbers in front of me.
The way that you framed it to Sirianni, I think, is correct in that if you are going to have this this outlook that you need to keep up with the Cowboys' offense, then you got to be going for that.
Exactly. Like if you're in this field position game, if you're in this field position game where like your approach is like, all right, let's just make it really hard. You know, like you were saying, let's shorten the game. You know, we're going to make them go the length of the field. We're going to wear clock away. We're going to limit the amount of like easy chances they could have at scoring. Then fine, play the field position game, even if I don't like it. But if your whole thing is we got to score. 4th and 5, Dallas 46, down 20 points, second quarter. You can't punt that ball. I mean, that's a bad decision. And in my – or I shouldn't say bad decision. That's too conservative of a decision. And it's not what I would have done in that situation. And,
well, does it match up philosophically with the way that they called the game in the first half?
And he said that that's what the chart told him to do. And he's trusting the chart. Now I don't know what chart they have. I don't know what models or what variables were going into the models they were using. You know, I don't know if it was based on Dallas, if it was based on being the road, if it was based on circumstance in the game. But
lunar calendar.
I'm just speculating here that whatever model Jeffrey Lurie endorses, I can't imagine it includes punting the ball in 4th and 5 at Dallas's 46. Right, like that. So then,
think the model he endorses is Iman.
I did not like that. And then he had a 4th and 5 at Dallas's 49, with like a minute to go or thereabouts in the second quarter. And that one, I'm okay punting it if Dallas didn't call a timeout. Like, and that was the bad time management that we were saying from McCarthy's perspective. Right. If they're going to I would have gone for it there. Try to get a field goal. You're getting the ball going in the half. If you can make it a 20-10 game and then you get the ball coming out of half, I would like that. So I would have tried to get another 10-15 yards. But I know the argument there is that if you miss that 4th and 5, you're at midfield, then you can set up Dallas for a potential field goal. So I can be talked out of that one, although I would have gone for it. I definitely would have gone for 4th and 5 at the 46. And I think it was I disagree with Sirianni's decision. I think it was inconsistent with his plan for the game. And I don't know what like Sirianni's doing on these 4th downs, to be honest with you. Yeah, it's like the coach right. He was, you know, so I don't know if it was an overcorrection from last week, but like last week he's gone for all these 4th downs, right? They don't work. And then this week he's doing the opposite. So
now I think we all agree, not to go back to this, but I think we all agree that Dennis is as plugged in on Super Sarcasting as it gets. Correct.
Correct.
He just messaged me to say, I am assuming Sweat's half sack doesn't count as a sack.
No, aww. No.
Out
no,
of
no,
the no. blue. He just messaged me that. Without having listened to this, this is not live. I think he's right. And he also doesn't have the McCarthy one as counting. He says the football world is definitely not talking about Mike McCarthy doing anything wrong now and certainly won't be tomorrow. But if Marissa gets the call, he says.
If Peyton Manning was talking about it, then that's the football world talking about it.
I don't know. That's just for the sickos. It's not the whole football world.
I will say at halftime, it was the discussion. For sure. Like, okay. It was all over
but
my
it was
Twitter
about
feed.
Tuesday. Peyton. It was about the day after.
Well, it does say post game.
We're talking about it.
Well, we're talking about it because it matters for the game.
I would argue that
with Sweat and McCarthy, those are two half points that add up to 1 point, thereby tying him with me.
I can assure you that if you had those and Shield did not, that you would have given yourself the points.
I'm here to argue. I mean,
so
Dennis is plugged in here.
Dennis is the official stat keeper, so he's making me question myself.
In any event, I've been up for 20 hours. I got to be up in 3 hours. We don't need to adjudicate super sorecasting right now. Let's have Shio on Thursday when we do the pod. We can flesh that out.
Marissa, can I tell you what about the ultimate flex that occurred before the game tonight?
Let's hear it.
It was about an hour away from kickoff. And Zach stands up from his seat in the press box, looks down at me from his perch above, and says, quote unquote, these five words, gonna go sign a book.
That's awesome.
I mean, first off, I appreciate anyone who purchased Underdogs, the Philadelphia Eagles emotional road to Super Bowl victory. And like I said, I'm like, on the first year on this podcast, anyone who has a copy and they want me to sign it, if you come to an Eagles game, I will do my best to sign it. Now tonight with 90,000 people there, there were some logistical issues that we ran into, but we are going to solve it in Charlotte when our reader is at the, I hope I can say his name, Robert, when Robert's coming to the Eagles Panthers game. Yep. So
we had a chance to have some tacos with DFOP Ed last night.
Quality place, Velvet Taco. I'm a quality company too, but quality place.
And quality company. I'm a big Ed man. Shout out to Ed, Rebecca, and KJ. I was going to tell my Eli story, but I guess I could save that for later.
Is it a succinct one?
I don't know. Have I told this story? It's okay. We'll save it for later. We'll save it for another Manning broadcast.
I've got a lot of Eli stories for you.
I'm a little nervous to. I don't know what path this is going to go down, but you did message us to remind you to tell your censorship story.
Yes, that's the same as the Eli story.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's just about how the only thing I ever wrote for PhiladelphiaEagles.com that was censored was a very silly thing making fun of Eli Manning's interception totals and his funny faces. And Chip Kelly did not want that as bulletin board material. Really made a difference in the game. So Eli will always have a place in my heart.
Eagles fans have a place in his heart too. I'm after his.
I heard the double bird.
Yeah. That was great.
Here's a David Baker thing, Zach. Now, for those of you who don't know, David Baker is the enormous, chilling-looking man who runs the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he was there at halftime tonight because there were these Cowboys who have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. And David Baker ended the thing by saying, "Go Cowboys." Now, how are we to feel about a man entrusted as the gatekeeper for the Hall of Fame saying "Go Cowboys" and showing partiality?
It's like a reporter saying the Eagles are going to win a game because of the crowd, right? He's pandering to his fans.
No, it's not. It would be like a referee saying the Eagles are going to win because of the crowd. What's the word I'm looking for?
The Eagles lost by 20 points. We need to get David Baker.
What is David Baker doing? He can't be doing that.
He's honoring the Hall of Fame.
He's supposed to be impartial.
Fine. It's fine. I mean, there are some other things from the game. I do think we should.
No wonder Drew Pearson got in.
There are some other things from the game. I do think we need to discuss.
Go Cowboys! Ridiculous. Me scaring children.
Isaac Seumalo had a serious injury tonight.
That's true.
Are you speculating Achilles? I mean, they're saying a foot.
I think John Clark reported a fractured foot.
Fractured foot. Okay.
Not as definite, but that's what he gotcha.
Okay.
What the fears.
Well, there you go. Okay. So I'm glad we didn't speculate Achilles. I just know foot carted off the field.
Carted off when you get carted off. And he was the reaction from players. And then after the game. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Bo asked Jason Kelsey about it, and Jason Kelsey which is touching. It, like, he was visibly emotional. Had to take 30 seconds to like gather himself, and you know, just talk about his admiration for Sayamalu. And it's I mean, you respect it because like you see just the like genuine affection among teammates, right? And so, but it obviously shows the severity of the injury. I don't think that's Jason's reaction if you know Isaac Sayamalu like you know twisted an ankle, right? It shows this is a serious thing. And so they had Andre Dillard starting,
which we haven't even talked about.
And yeah, which we haven't talked
well tonight.
And we it actually came out after our podcast on Thursday, right? The Mylod injury. Yeah, so we haven't even discussed that on the pod, but I assume you've read our content, or I hope you've read our content. Jordan Mailata gets hurt at practice Thursday. He kind of tells the team on Friday it's a sprained knee. He's not going on IR, which means that they think he can come back within the next three games. So we'll see. But Andre Dillard starts. So. And then, of course, we know Brandon Brooks' injury. Landon Dickerson was in there. So now the Eagles are down.
Yeah, he did not look good tonight.
So they're down three starters on the offensive line. And it's like it's.
Well, yeah, we talked all offseason about, you know, if they stay healthy. And
exactly.
We've made it through three games and they've already lost three guys.
Yep. And then, you know, defensive line. Now, Fletcher Cox, you know, that was not an injury. You know, he lost a lot of weight this week because he had an illness. And so
how much weight do you think a lot of weight is?
Well, it's all relative, you know, when you're 320 pounds and you don't eat for 4 days or you have an illness, I imagine, you know, it's a substantial amount of weight.
What are we talking? 60 pounds?
No, I was thinking like 15.
Oh, I don't think it's even that many. Do you?
I don't know. I mean, I think
you lost 15 pounds in a week.
I was going to say this, like, I'm trying to say this in like a respectful way. I think Marissa is our resident expert on big football players, right? The
weight vagaries of a big, strong, powerful man.
Yeah. Like if they eat a certain amount, if they don't eat a certain amount, like I think she would know how that affects their well-being.
Marissa.
I'm not going to lie. I was listening to the ads that we have.
Sorry about that. I was worried that I offended you for a moment.
So Michael, oh, no. I heard weight, Marissa being an expert, and I'm like, oh, shoot, uh-oh. Piece it together.
Marissa, so, if Michael didn't eat for 4 days, how much weight do you think he would lose?
Well, he would be miserable. Let's just put it that way. He was miserable that I was like, I don't feel like I need a snack tonight. I'm like, let's just go to bed. We took a little nap before we recorded this podcast. I don't know. I think he can lose sometimes in a practice, like 8 pounds.
Whoa.
Yeah, if he's sweating a lot. So
the context here is that Fletcher Cox had an illness. He said he couldn't eat for 4 days, lost a lot of weight. So he had cramps tonight. And, you know, they just thought that it was best if he stayed on the sideline because of, you know, what his body's been through this week.
I would say, well, and if he was like practicing and did he practice this week? I would say like 10 to 15 pounds.
Okay.
I would say that's a lot of weight for doing nothing and not eating.
Oh, that's definitely a lot of weight.
Yeah. I mean, don't quote me. Like, I'm really not an expert, but I would say.
You're the closest we've got.
You're the closest we got.
Yeah. I would say that's a lot of weight. Like, I know that sometimes if Michael's like weighs himself in the morning and works out, like he could lose like 8 pounds in a hard workout. So, yeah,
it's all relative.
Man, right? I'd love to lose 8 pounds in a workout.
I mean, like once you start drinking water and stuff, I think he like will gain it back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so if he wasn't eating and wasn't practicing, I would say. I don't know. I would think that's about right, but not sure.
Dennis checks in again because she also had Derek Barnett is flagged for unnecessary roughness, and obviously he had the offsides. And then we didn't even talk about the broadcast showed Nick Sirianni saying like it's always him, and I think he was talking to you, Zach. I think you guys got plugged in radio together, which was nice.
I don't think that.
I know that's right.
But look, and,
Dennis said Barnett had a stupid penalty. Sweat got part of a sack. McCarthy did something sort of dumb. Dot, dot, dot. Shields list is a portfolio of near misses, but it's a game of inches. He's got me up 2-1.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
I do think we need to speak about the penalties here. This is three games now, so the sample size is getting bigger. And this is problematic, all right? They have the most penalties in the NFL, I believe, right? The according to Tim McManus from ESPN Stats Info, the set the record for most penalties through the first three games of a season
in franchise history.
In franchise history, not
in NFL history.
And Nick Sirianni hit, you know, two of his five core values are football IQ and fundamentals, right?
Like, and accountability. That's three of the five. Yeah. So 60% is like penalty based.
Yeah. And this expression that he's been using where, you know, you need to like be great at the things that require no talent. Like they are an undisciplined football
team. When is he going to put Derek Barnett in jail?
I'm not even talking about Derek Barnett here. And I'm just talking like just overall, just the amount of I don't even want to say foolish penalties because sometimes they're just in, you know, it's a holding here.
Well, and they're coming in like they're coming in every way.
Yeah,
in every form or fashion, like it's spread across the team. Here are they committed 15 penalties tonight. Only 13 of them counted. Here is how they were split up. Javon Hargrave had one. Darius Slay had one. Marcus Epps had one. Derek Barnett had one. Greg Ward had one on special teams. Isaac Seumalo had one. Zach Ertz had one. Andre Dillard had two, although as we talked about, one was not really his fault. One was Milton Williams had one. Landon Dickerson had one. Lane Johnson had two. Nate Herbig had one. And there was a 12 men on the field penalty. Like, that's like half that's on offense, half on defense, half that were pre-snap, half that were during. It's undisciplined. And all now I do think that like a bunch of them came in the second half when the game was already sort of the outcome was already decided and maybe guys were getting more sloppy, but I don't, that's not a good thing either.
No. So it was, I mean, that's bad. That is bad.
It is bad. Yeah. I mean, what are we doing here? As you like to say, every week is a season, but like week one feels like years ago. But I mean, now they committed a bunch of penalties in that game too. But like everything seems so much crisper. I guess really all it does is tell us how bad the Atlanta Falcons are.
Mm-hmm.
And by proxy, how bad the New York Giants are.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get out of here, huh?
I'm sorry. I mean, there's more I can talk about here. Real quick, Hurts' interception to Diggs. I know Devontae Smith fell. When I went to watch it back, it certainly looked like Diggs just read it. And if Smith was upright, like Diggs just would have jumped in front of him. I'm just going through my notes here. Defense. I mean, they played soft, right?
Very soft.
Yes. Yeah, you knew the Cowboys were going to throw the ball.
I don't think we've spent enough time on the defense actually, because like the defense was bad tonight. And, you know, they only let up two explosive plays by the, you know, the 20 plus, but they were like six that were at least 15 yards, but they like, it looked like the Cowboys, especially in the first half, could move the ball however they wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, every run was like 6 yards and every pass was super easy to complete. They were not getting enough pressure on Dak. Like a defense that looked like it could be something pretty good in the first two games looked just totally outclassed and sort of scared of this Cowboys offense. Now, you know, I was hoping we were going to see, you know, some tricks from the defense, not a lot of blitzes. We did see a few new things. We saw a new formation where it was like the base personnel up front. So you had four linemen, three down linemen, one of the standing guys and Jannard Avery, but also a nickel defensive back group. So that meant only one linebacker on the field, true linebacker, not counting Jannard Avery. That was a new thing, but you know, it's not like it worked wonders or anything like that. We saw a similar thing with just the different personnel that they were using up front and at linebacker, but it was not anything exciting.
Now, the one thing that I will say, and I know this isn't something Eagles fans might want to hear, but there is a chance this Cowboys team's really good, right? Like they lose week one to the Bucks at the last minute of the game, right? They beat the Chargers last week. Chargers are a good team that just beat Kansas City. And they completely outclassed the Eagles. Now we'll see. They have the Panthers next week. But then after that, I mean, they have the Giants, Patriots, Vikings. Like, I mean, the Cowboys could be running away with this division. Like my big takeaway tonight was just the gulf between the Cowboys offense and the Eagles offense.
Yeah.
And
the Eagles have gotten just donkey womped the last three trips to Arlington.
Mm-hmm.
They lost by at least 20 points each of the last three times. Mm-hmm. 115 to 48 over those three games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cowboys are, yeah, that's a tough matchup for them. And it's like, you know, those pieces, I mean, Dak's not going anywhere, right? CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, Zeke Elliott, Tony Pollard. I don't know how much longer that backfield will be together, but point is like, that's a team that, that their core is going to be in place. And so if the Eagles are going to be something in this division, they need a coach and a play caller a quarterback and a play caller that is going to do what Sirianni said, which is, you know, keep pace with them. And tonight they did not keep pace.
So, I mean, you asked me this question in the car, Zach Flex, that you drove the car.
Mm-hmm.
What is your, like, does this change your big picture thoughts on the team? So through 3 weeks, how do you feel about this team relative to how you felt at the start of the season?
They're essentially what I expected going into the year, right? They're inconsistent. There's growing pains. I think, you know, the first two games, they looked better than I expected. I thought tonight was a step back. I purposefully don't overreact to one game. Like I say, every week's a season.
I did say
going into the year, right, that the first, you know, 2 months of the season is going to be tough sledding for them. And then they're going to be a team that gets some momentum going into the back half of the season of, you know, going into next year. You're going to hear, well, the way they finished the season.
Uncle Mo.
And I think you mentioned it. My mind is a complete blur right now, but I think you mentioned the upcoming schedule, the Chiefs, the Panthers, the Bucks, the Raiders, then the Lions after that. So, but these next four games are
Chargers and the Broncos.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a tough schedule coming up, and there aren't many wins and like, there aren't many that you say they have a good chance of winning. Now there can always be upsets
in one of the next eight games.
Yeah. So there can always be upsets, but I think this gets worse before it gets better.
Yeah. But you know, it's not like, you know, yes, it's an outcome based thing, but we're not judging them based on the outcome here. Like, you know, if they come out next week and have an interesting offensive game plan and are able to move the ball consistently against the Chiefs and they lose, that's fine. You just want to see that, like, the stewards of moving this organization forward know what they're doing. And, you know, right now, as they embark on this rebuild, you know, do you have faith that they're going to make the most out of the draft picks? Do you have faith that, this coaching staff is going to be able to formulate a cohesive offensive game plan week to week? Right now, I think you're not so sure. I mean, it's been three games. It's way too early to say, you know, give Sirianni some time, but it's been a fall since week one. I think that's fair to say.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. I know you want to go to sleep. I still got to write.
I got a day coming up, man. I'm on radio coming up. I got a day.
Well, it's your own fault for committing to that early AM radio spot.
That's fine. Anything to promote The Athletic. So,
any more thoughts on David Baker? He's a scary guy. You have to admit.
No, I don't judge someone based on them being big any more than I would want someone to judge me based on being small. So,
it's not just that he's big; he's creepy. Go Cowboys. I mean, what is that?
I'm not a creep.
You're supposed to be the gatekeeper. Go Cowboys.
He would be a good gatekeeper, though.
I'm like terrified of what's inside the gate, if that's the case.
Isn't that the purpose of a gatekeeper? They keep the gate for you, right? They.
Oh, well, he's also like, I believe if you do some research, he's like committed some like campaign finance fraud when he ran for office.
I'm not getting into this.
It's just—it's a matter of public record. Go Cowboys! I mean, come on. What's next? Like Sean Lee's going in the Hall of Fame? Give me a break.
We're coming back Thursday with Shiel. Looking forward to that podcast. Big week ahead.
3:30. We're gonna have a double, supersized episode. Getting his thoughts on this game, and also looking forward to Sunday's game against the Kansas City Chiefs.
But I imagine that the game plan for Sunday, my prediction is they need to keep pace with the Chiefs offense. So
my prediction is pain. You got to be comfortable in the silence. Yeah, you know what I mean? All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for this episode of Burns with Friends, post-game edition. Sorry to everybody who watched that game, but hopefully this podcast made it worth it. I'm sure it did. I'm sure you enjoyed the David Baker discussion and the minute about super storecasting. For Shiel and Dennis and Ed and Zach and Marissa and Michael and, of course, David Baker, I'm Bo. Thanks for listening. Go Cowboys. And as always, we love you.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.